Well, welcome to Drive Through HR. I guess we have no music this morning. So that is all right. And William and I will not sing. So unless William, unless you want to, I don't think we do, but let's get it kicked off. Let's get to our guest. It's William, Brian, and Nisha coming to live every single day and talking about HR with the people that are getting it done out there. And cannot wait to hear what our guest has to share with us today. Mary Delaney, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, if you would, introduce yourself and tell our lovely listeners, and from there we'll kind of roll into what's top of mind with you.
Sure, thank you. I am the CEO of Luceo Solutions. We're a recruitment technology company. Our mission is to take the challenge out of hiring great talent. And we're 10 years old. We're privately held, wholly owned subsidiary of CareerBuilder. A little bit about me, I've spent the past decade and a half in working with companies on the recruitment process, technology, branding. So my life has been focused on recruiting. Prior to Luceo, I started and led Personified, and as a human capital consulting and outsourcing firm. And before Personified, I was the CSO at CareerBuilder.
Nice. Yeah, CareerBuilder is a fantastic company, and I don't know if they still do this, but years ago they used to have kind of an internal kind of a competition to come up with different business initiatives or different kind of spin-out ideas, et cetera, and then whoever won that competition, then they'd kind of CareerBuilder would put some money behind those ideas. Am I making that up? Did I read this? Do I have the wrong company? Do they still do that type of stuff?
You know, it's one of the most phenomenal programs, I think, that we have over at CareerBuilder, and looking to really cultivate that at Luceo as well. And it was one of the conversations I was going to have when it's how do you involve your people and make them feel engaged and that they're making a difference. It's called Ideas from Everywhere. And basically, anyone can send in a business idea. From there, they're looked at and considered. You make it to the next phase. You can have a mentor or sponsor helping to kind of guide your thoughts or be a sounding board. But it's all your work. It goes to the final cut where there's typically six people and all the leadership is there to see them present. And then they pick one or two of the ideas. It's funded. And typically that person gets the first shot at really presenting why they should go run this idea, whether it's a company or a product or an advancement. It was so successful. Many of CareerBuilder's enhancements are from that idea that they spun off other kind of quicker ideas from everywhere where they partner technology and an outside business person who's in sales or marketing together to come up with ideas. They get 5 minutes to present them, and many of those are selected as well. So it's just one of those ideas. I think it comes from the GE days years ago, is how do you unlock the innovation with your own organization, and CareerBuilder has done a great job doing that.
That's just genius. That is, I can't remember if I had read it or whatever, but I'm glad you actually took our audience into that space. You've interacted with HR for years. What do you think right now at this particular time, what do you think keeps up HR up at night?
Well, I think there's a few things, and this could be gut, but we also did a survey. It was actually, because we're owned by CareerBuilder, some of the research I'll give you will be from them, just since they have access to so many employers around the world. And there was a survey done in November, and they surveyed just under 1,600 employers. This is really for the SMB space, but I'd say it's similar for others. This is for 500 employees or less. And we asked them about that, and they said, you know, one is the ability to provide competitive compensation. Two, the ability to retain top talent. I think as the marketplace has, you know, grown fully over the last few years, but talent is leaving again. They're feeling comfortable about leaving. How do I keep my A players? Maintaining productivity levels, how do I keep our team as productive and even increase their productivity? Because I think we worked during the downturn to get as much productivity out of our people as we could. Employee morale, I think, is always one, and that was the fourth. And then it goes to finding skilled workers, you know, especially in key areas like technology, healthcare, worker burnout, and upward mobility. Those were the top seven.
Nice. I want to ask about skills gap and get your take. Again, you have a wonderful vantage point with this stuff. What do you perceive the state of the union of the skills gap is right now in the U.S.?
There's a huge challenge with many different positions out there. We do studies on supply and demand, and you'll see that there are, 12 positions for one technology person out there, depending on the type of person you're looking for. So it's in pockets. You know, we talk about unemployment, but really there's the opposite challenge with so many of the skilled positions out there. So a couple ideas. One is that everyone's looking for a certain title, and there's many different ways to be able to understand career paths nowadays. We can provide you some data, and then CareerBuilder is a great product, supply demand, where you can actually look at what did the person I'm looking for do right before they got that position. And especially if you might be not be competitive on compensation, or you're in an environment where geographically it's just really tight, then you can look for that position, people with that experience, and then fill the training void yourself. And I think in the United States, we're going to have to take more and more responsibility to bridge the gap in training, because the skills gap is not going away. It's just getting worse.
Yes. The false dichotomy of train versus hire for skills, like what's your general take? Should we kind of harvest and train folks to maybe they don't have the skills, maybe we bring them a little bit raw, but we train them up and kind of go that development route? Or do you perceive it as a game of hiring people that already have the skills, et cetera? Like what's your general take on train versus hire?
One, I don't think we have a choice. I think nowadays in these hard-to-fill positions, we have to commit to training. You also get a higher level of commitment from the employee who feels like you really, built up their resume, built up their experience, and gave them a shot. And it takes less away on the need to be competitive on the compensation front. So when you look all in all, you can either buy talent at a higher price, or you can buy them at lower and you can invest that money in training and really get a higher engaged, committed employee in the end.
Do you like, in terms of compensation statements or the total compensation statements where you give them the benefits cost and all the perks, et cetera, how do you highlight in all of that the amount of money that you're investing in them in terms of training and developing them?
Well, there are programs now that you can actually use, and your benefits companies should be able to provide you with this, where once a year or twice a year, you can send out a statement to your employees and put value on each of the different soft benefits that you give them, and it would show them a total compensation. And I think that's a good idea. It's really important to put in front of them really what they're getting paid, because sometimes they don't take the time to think about those things. We did do another study. I'm full of studies today, but on outside of salary, what is most important to them when considering a job offer? So this is before they're employed, where after you can kind of put value around these. And the most important thing, and it was 66% said affordable benefits. So that's one thing to really look at, is how do you stack rank amongst your competition on benefits? The second is culture. That's harder to just do a SAC ranking. That is really more your annual surveys to measure that you're improving and where are you versus, you know, the survey company's benchmark and how you do versus your industry or the country. Flexible schedules is third. We're starting our half-day Fridays in 4 weeks for anyone in good standing for the summer. Our employees, when we surveyed them a few years back, said they'd rather have that all year round than they would a pay increase, that it really meant a lot to them. Career advancements was next. Learning, it goes back to learning opportunities. And then autonomy, the ability to do your job without someone, you know, looking over your shoulder all the time.
Nice. You know, I want to ask you about telework and remote work and, you know, just get your general take after the Yahoo CEO kind of came down and did what they did. And it might or might not have made sense for them, et cetera. Kind of long term, we're going to figure all that stuff out, or at least the market will sort all that stuff out. But from your perspective, what's your take on the how we get work done part?
That was interesting to read about, too, and we'll see how that evolves with other companies over the next year or two as they follow their lead or don't. What I've seen is, especially in these tight markets where you're trying to find, you know, the skilled labor and you can't find them, having a flexible work schedule, work from home, is really a key advantage because many companies, you know, still don't offer it. I think the last study we did was over 70% don't offer the flexible work schedule. And to many, that's really critical. And there's a whole segment of workforce that off-ramped to go have children or whatever their life choice were. And they're trying to get back on, but maybe it needs to be a flexible work schedule. And I've, in the new company in Luceo, I've really tried to tap into those folks and onboard them into the company. So we are definitely, we have people in Chicago and France and elsewhere, but we also have people in five other states around the country working from home. And a lot of studies say they're more productive than the people in the office. And I could see how that plays out because there's no interruptions and there's not as much of the need for socialization in the middle of the day.
Yeah, it's like the focus time argument, you know, 6 hours of focus time versus, you know, 8 to 10 hours of not as focused time. You've mentioned the word pockets a couple times, and I wanted for the audience to kind of dig into that just a little bit. From your perspective, industries that are really kind of still, quote-unquote, I'm using air quotes, Mary, the war for talent, industries, geography, types of roles, where do you see it the hardest to really, you know, the roles that are really difficult right now? And I'll give you a little backdrop. Last time I was out in Silicon Valley, I met with a recruiter out there, and I said, you know, it's just not the normal. It was actually a Twitter recruiter, and he said it's not the normal people that you would expect. It's not just Facebook and Google and Salesforce.com and Oracle and all these other Square and all these other typical players. It's Wall Street. We're competing now because Wall Street wants software engineers and technical talent. We're not just fighting the battle that we've always fought locally for the talent. We're fighting a new battle, that there's another industry that's starved for this technical talent, and they're kind of creeping into our world. So I use that as a backdrop to just kind of any insight you can give the audience into any of those pockets would be great.
Sure. With information technology, it's not only Wall Street, it's Main Street. You know, companies are realizing their way into the future and the way to stay competitive is through information technology. And so I think they're competitive around the country. There's a technology, I mentioned the supply-demand analysis that CareerBuilder started to develop probably 4 years ago when I was there and involved in it, and now it's come full fruition. It answers the question, I'm trying to hire this type of technology person. Where is the greatest supply to demand ratio, meaning where do I have the best chance with my compensation plan to hire this person. And if I'm willing to hire them in a work from home basis, I can go in there and look, or I can recruit them and bring them to me. And for these tight markets, information technology is one, sales is another, it's number two in what we're seeing, engineering, production, and then research, development, and business development are all the top areas where it's very tight, and it's tight in many parts of the U.S., not just in Silicon Valley or in the Southeast area.
Nice. Let's pivot real quick. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show, and I want to talk to you because you're a technology leader. It would be I'd be remiss if we didn't actually talk about technology. Where do you start? Like, where do you know? Where does the average HR leader, you know, corporate recruiter, etc., where do they start when trying to figure out what technologies they should use as opposed to ones that they shouldn't?
Sure, and that's a great question because the whole recruitment space has evolved so much in the last year or two. So if you really in the last 6-8 months. If you haven't looked and really done an analysis on do I have the right technology today, I would say it's time to look at that. There's talent networks, mobile, and sophisticated ATS platforms are all three areas that I think you have to look at. And they're no longer out of reach for the little guys, for the SMBs. Because there's cloud technology now, it's made recruiting technology affordable and accessible for businesses of all sizes. I'd start, and not just because I'm in this role, but I think it's the foundation of everything you look for. And ATS is a must-have for the big guys as well as the small guys nowadays. Today's ATSs are fast and easy to implement, and the efficiency gains that you can get out of it are huge. Many of the talent networks, too, is another area to look at. Talent networks is kind of newer terminology, and it's this engine that goes out and sources and cultivates your future candidates so that when you do have a requisition, you can match all this proprietary pool of talent against those requisitions. And then mobile. Mobile is another area to look at. The latest data I saw on kind of Career Builder main job boards is that 30% of all candidates that go to apply for jobs today are doing it on a mobile device. And so it's really critical to make sure that you have a way to connect with those candidates and get their information.
Nice. Let's stick with ATS for just a second. It's the second oldest category in all of HR software. Time and attendance is technically a little bit older than ATS, but ATS is a very established category. It's been around. Most people kind of know what it is, et cetera. But from your perspective, why do ATS rollouts, for whatever reason, why do they fail? Like, what are the speed bumps or the failure points for a successful rollout of an ATS?
Sure, and I'm going to take it one step back because I'm afraid that maybe people don't know what it is anymore because ATS applicant tracking system is so not descriptive for what it does today versus what it did 4 or 5 years ago. So just to highlight, and then I'll talk about, you know, why it fails. With an ATS, what are you getting? You're getting the career site that brands your company, markets your open opportunities, and then it should, with a click of a button, allow your candidates to give you their information. What it should do, what many ATSs don't, is they're rec-based. So it's all about you have a job, now you need to advertise it and let them apply. It should allow them to just let you know, without a requisition, that I want to work for your company in the future someday if an opportunity comes up. So that's something to look at, first of all, is does your ATS have a way to capture talent even when you don't have an opportunity? The other thing it should be able to do is referrals. It should be able to look at your employees and say whether or not they're a good fit for something, and it should allow you to source. once it does all that, then it's typical, right? You can screen, you can match, and you can market to those candidates. Marketing, there should be a powerful CRM. CRM, a lot of us know, is customer relationship management, but it's also candidate relationship management. And that way, you can start to send information out that gives them a glimpse into your company, the recognition you do, the training you do, the benefits you have, the successes that people have when they join your company. All of that warms them up so that when you do have an opportunity, they're saying, take me, versus you having to sell them. The third, of course, is workflow automation. That's what we know it for, where it just makes everything you do automated, so you don't have to press buttons, send emails, notify people, ask permission, et cetera. It just does it all invisibly. But the software also should provide you with the ability to onboard, whether it's, you know, magically do your drug testing and your background checks and do all your government forms and get all the signatures and package it up and let you know when they're ready to go. And then it should give you the reporting visibility you need to make decisions in your business. So it does a lot more, I think, than what people bought before and downloaded software into their system and paid for upgrades. Now it does it all, and people work behind the scenes to develop it constantly, and you get the benefit of all those upgrades without having to go through the upgrades, in quotes, themselves. So that's a little bit about what it is. I think there's many reasons why it fails, and I'll give you the top couple I see. The first is that so many are difficult to use. Prior to my life at Luceo, I wrote two guidebooks on the different ATSs around the world and what you should look for in an ATS and how they each of them deliver in that area. And what I found is people don't like their ATSs, and mostly it's because it's hard. And there are four types of customers, and you got to think of all four when you're building the ATS or when you're buying it. The candidate. HR spends a lot of money to source candidates and attract them to their brand. And if people go to your site to apply, but only one out of five or one out of ten actually apply because they get frustrated in the interim, that's a bad ATS. It should be really easy. It shouldn't make you register. It should be able to grab your information, field it all, and, you know, make a file on you without having you to do anything other than upload a resume and click enter, or say, I'm interested, here's my name and here's my interest in my location. So that's one. It's got to be easy. It's got to be really intuitive for the candidate. The hiring manager, I think back to my days as a sales executive and think, would I have ever gone in an ATS? And the answer is no. But recruiters say their number one challenge is having their internal customers look at resumes and give them feedback. And so some ATSs out there built integration into email where you can press a button, the candidate goes to the hiring manager in their email with some areas that they can say, I, you know, want to move them forward, or I want to disposition them. They just enter the information, type in the reason, it's a drop down, and they're really pressing buttons in the back end of the ATS. But it's in their email, so they don't even know they learned an ATS, and all of it's happening, you know, virtually. So that's really important. The recruiter, it needs to be quick. It can't take four clicks to add a note. It can't take four clicks to see someone else's notes. And so one thing I ask everyone to do is make sure you make a list in order of priority of what your top actions are that you do in a system or you do manually, and then count the number of clicks it takes in each ATS you look at. Our goal, we do a bake-off and say it's got to take two or less clicks compared to anyone else. And we've developed this hover technology so that you literally hover and it gives you the answer. You don't have to click, because it's just important for the recruiters, who are the power people in the system, to have it easy for them. So I would say make sure it's easy. One, make sure you understand the SLAs. So understand, do you have live people who will service you afterwards, or do you get to send something into an email box? what's the turnaround time? What's their uptime? What's their speed? And then I'd make sure you have the different buyers, the different types of buyers at the table in the beginning to map out what your process is going to be. And good ATS companies have exceptional consultants to initially look at your process and make suggestions on how you can automate or integrate with other third-party solutions that will help you be cutting-edge and more effective in recruiting the top talent. Really listen to them and consider what they're saying because they do this every day.
Yeah. Mary said so many genius things in there. One of the things I definitely want to highlight for the audience is during your implementation, at some point, apply for a job from your own company. Go to the career page, you know, and go through the entire process as it is now, and that'll help you, and that's for everybody. I mean, that's just go through that process, and you'll see what a torturous gauntlet you've created for people, and do whatever it takes to make that easy. So I absolutely love that. And I think post-implementation, it's also very good to go back and do that exercise, both in the technology implementation teams as well as HR and recruiting. Go back through the process. Just pick a job, apply, go back through the system and see what you like, and hopefully at that point what you love, et cetera. Let's pivot over to what your thoughts on where the technology is going. We hear a lot about HR, metrics and big data, and especially in your world, a lot of things about predictive and forecasting. Where do you see the, you know, recruiting technology world, you know, in the next 3 to 4 years?
I think a couple things. One is mobile. Mobile is key. Social, and there'll be more and more social opportunities emerging on how you're able to open web, where you're able to really look at and consider and get more information on your candidate before 8 and after 5, as well as your ability to source and find really the best candidates. I think big data is another huge area, and you're right on the predictive. And the other thing I would say is the integration capabilities. So many people believe that the easiest decision is to find one solution that does everything. It'll source for me. It'll, do my recruitment workflow, and it'll onboard, and it'll manage my people, and it'll train them, and the solution from soup to nuts. And you can see the industry has done acquisitions to really become a soup to nuts, and in the kind of the big players in this business. What I believe is you can either have that. Or, and even if you do, I would look at each of those software technologies separately and say, is this the best one for me? Because every single one of us has web services or a DPI where we can integrate with anyone. So I think the important thing is to say, who's my best kind of talent network provider? Who's my best workflow automation, and sourcing and career site and reporting tool? And then who's my best HRIS, et cetera? And have them integrate those solutions so they're seamless. It could be a one-size-fits-all. But it doesn't have to be. And when you think, I think 24/7, including the weekends, ask my kids, on how can we innovate? How can we do better for our customers in the recruiting world? When you think of some of those other companies that are one size fits all, I just wonder how much time they're spending thinking about recruiting. And one other thought for you. Oh, a thought you had was brilliant about going on and applying to your own company. I would also suggest saying, who's your competition for talent, not for your product, and apply to them. And then ask yourself, who would you work for if you didn't know any better? And that's a great litmus test to figure out what you need to bulk up in your brand and your experience.
Nice, because we're competing in one way, shape, or form. We're competing for share of voice, et cetera. Mary, we've got about 15 seconds left in the show. How can people best kind of keep track of you or connect with you? And we'll roll out to a little music.
Sure, Mary. You can either email me, Mary.Delaney at LucioUS.com, or you can find me at LinkedIn, Mary W. Delaney, LinkedIn.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. And everyone, thank you for listening to Drive Through HR. We'll go out to a little bit of Cure. Thanks.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.